in regard to the Petraeus business. He said, first, it's clear to me that former Director of Central Intelligence General Petraeus achieved the former state, the state of being former, because he tried to hide his extramarital affair. Knowing what I do about this type of clearance, it is not necessarily the mistaken act that loses a person their clearance. It is lying about mistakes. When I first got my clearance, I was in the throes of losing my driver's license because I had received and not fought a 5-point speeding ticket. I got my clearance because I told the investigator about the ticket. Side note, for conservatives, conspiracy watchers, if the Obama administration campaign had used this misdeed to lean on the Director of Central Intelligence to give favorable testimony, like that there was 25 DF and CIA operators in Benghazi who entered the engagement with the rioter and militia, as was reported within 25 minutes of the start of hostilities, and a second force was en route when the ambassador died at that facility, there is no way they would have outed him. They would have quietly relieved him of command and let him quietly and secretly retire to the private sector. There is no cover-up. Then Tosh asked this question, upon which we may all ponder. No person shall be held to answer for a capital. This is from the Fifth Amendment. This is the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That line about except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia is, along the way, what gives rise to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is wildly different from
trucking right. I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other. We'll be right back.
Well, as the saying goes, yay, hooray. I have had word from Mr. Gibson in the chat room that we've got good audio, good acceptable quality audio coming through. I'm tweaking here right now just to make things a little more bearable. All right, so are we rolling again? Yeah, we're rolling again. Let's hit that button and get it going. Shall we start from the beginning? I suppose. Let's see here. Boost, boost. Oh, not you. Yes, you. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Moran Monday on the Horn, broadcasting live from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act campaign in Washington, D.C. We got here late last night, drop-dead exhausted. Got a late start. That happens a lot with us. It just does. But it is. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, and just a gentle reminder. Like I said, you can get the Horn on most any streaming platform out there, whether it be TuneIn, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, you know, podcasting at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for Head On with Bob Kincaid, and of course you can always get the podcast at iTunes. I love this. If I do that, then I'll drive my own self deaf. Where is it? Hold on. All right, we got that. We got that. And we got that. Any better? Or is it all cracking up and breaking up now? I don't know. Maybe if we turn this off. Okay, anyway, hopefully this is all getting out. The Horn is a collaborative effort of some, well, we're working on our eighth year now, and we are listener-supported. If you go to headonradionetwork.com and look at the little bar graph, you will see that we are $500 from the end of the month in fundraising. On the old monthly goal of $2,500 a month, and the new monthly goal suggested by listeners of $3,000, we're $1,000 away from that. That'd be $200 a night for the next week. I don't know. That might be a tough one. But at any rate, everything helps. And the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Dr. John had asked, after listening to Carol's call last week and the contribution that Carol made in memory of his friend who had been murdered, asked to know when Boss Man Wayne received that at the mailbox, because he wanted to participate in his own way in that memorial. And so, yeah, I did talk to Boss Man Wayne over the weekend, and Carol's kind contribution did arrive, and thank you very much, Carol, for that. Now, where do we go? Where do we go with this Moran Monday? Like I said, we got here late last night, so there wasn't much to see. But because we're working on the AIC Act here, we had an appointment this afternoon in a congressional office. So we went wandering across the north side of the plaza of the Capitol of the United States of America. And we turned to look back, because we're very near the Supreme Court. You know, that place that's infested by rats. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Well, apparently they're working on getting rid of them, because there's scaffolding all over the place, all kinds of construction going on. And this is just one of those little Moran moments. You can call me out if you want to. Like that poem by Robert Frost, and that line that says, "I'm so liberal I won't take my own side in a fight." I may be wrong about this, We turned around to look back at the Supreme Court, and the entire facade, you know, it's a classical facade. It looks like an ancient Greek temple. And there's a frieze in the space there. Oh, what's the term for it? Well, anyway, there's the triangular space, and there's a frieze. And all the little fundamentalists, and, well, look, they got Moses right there in the middle. That means we have to post the Ten Commandments in the bathroom now. Yeah, okay. But anyway, we turned around to look back at the and it's got scaffolding all over the front. But it looks like the scaffolding, the plastic that's in front of the scaffolding, looks like it's transparent. But if you stand there and look at it long enough, you realize that you're dealing with a trick of the eye. Now, they are spending a blue freaking fortune on this renovation. You know, like our house back there in West Virginia, the Supreme Court building was built about 80 years ago. And one begins to get the idea that they're both in about the same kind of shape. But we turned around and looked back at the Supreme Court there and took a minute. Because at first it looked like the plastic that was hanging over the scaffolding was transparent, but it wasn't. It was a photograph of the front of the Supreme Court on the plastic hanging in front of the scaffolding where the restoration and preservation work is being done. Now, you know me. I'm no fiscal conservative. Spend, spend, spend. I want my government to spend money. I want my government to spend the money that the taxpayers pay into it to make the taxpayers' lives better. I like roads. I like bridges. I like public construction projects that pay a good prevailing wage to union and non-union workers alike. You know, Davis-Bacon stuff. God, speaking of morons, where did I see the other day somebody said that Davis-Bacon Act was created to help black people? Yeah, right-wingers, just keep saying that stuff, would you? We do love it when you say that kind of stuff, because it goes over so well. But no, I like public works projects. I believe in them. And I believe in keeping our monumental edifices in good shape. But really? A giant photograph of the front of the Supreme Court of the United States on the plastic that is hanging in front of the Supreme Court of the United States? And I mean, it's not like it was done in Crayola. It's very photorealistic. In point of fact, if you will go to today's show post at headonradionetwork.com, you know, there's a little rotator. Thank you, Agnes. You doll. You'll see a photograph of it. And for a minute there, it looks like the Supreme Court, but it's a picture of the Supreme Court. And I gotta ask, because the Congress controls the purse strings of the court. And the court is, of course, ruled by John Roberts, you know, that blue-eyed freak with the 30-mile stare. He's a fiscal conservative. So is Fat Tony Scalia. So is Slappy Thomas. So is Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Kennedy's a conservative. I mean, it's not like Ruth Bader Ginsburg's out there writing the checks. So it kind of begs the question, whose idea was it to pay for a giant drop cloth with a picture of the Supreme Court on it? And how much did it cost us, really? And like I said, I may not even take my own side in this fight. But there was something initially that made me go, what? I mean, we're sitting here talking about fiscal cliffs, or as Charles Pierce refers to them, the gently sloping fiscal incline. The fiscal cliff that isn't a fiscal cliff. We're talking about fiscal disaster just around the corner, and a plain plastic drop cloth won't do for renovations to the Supreme Court. Instead, we've got to have a photograph of the front of the Supreme Court to hang in front of the front of the Supreme Court. I mean, if I found out that there was some local businessman, local business employing local people that had labored long and hard to create this, I might feel better about it. But this is the federal government. I've got a sneaking suspicion that this was probably done by some giant defense contractor using drone imaging technology. Because, I mean, it's really good. And I just bet you this was not, no. Although, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know how I would even begin to find out who was responsible for that. But we're talking about raising the retirement age for the Medicare eligibility age. We're talking about states that don't want to participate in the expansion of Medicaid. Apparently, there's a portion the Affordable Care Act's contraception mandate is going to be reheard or reconsidered by the Fourth Circuit by the orders of the Supreme Court of the United States. How reusable is that plastic thingamajig? I'm just saying. I mean, are they going to fold it up and put it away till the next time they have to renovate it in 50 years? By then, they'll just do all the work with lasers, and they'll have a hologram in front of the building, we hope. Ugh. But it was a good day, and you know, we are here working on the AIC Act, and I would like to ask your help, your cooperation. If you have, and you know, I've said it in the past, don't be afraid to contact a Republican member of the House. This is about birth defects. This is about what happens to babies in the womb. Send me an email if you make contact this week, and I will try. We'll try to, if nothing else, drop a flyer by. And hopefully, you know, get folks thinking about it. You know, of course, anything you want to know about the AIC Act, you can learn at aikact.org, aikact.org. You can understand, you'll go there and you'll find out why it's so important that we do finish the job that the AIC Act contemplates and end mountaintop removal in Appalachia. And just send me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and we will drop a flyer by, or hope maybe somebody will even take a meeting with us. It'd be nice. No, it is. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and we got a lot of Morans. We're Moran poor. But I do have to tell you that the ordinary phone lines don't work this time through because we are, Agnes is here with me. The whole fam damily is here. And as a result of that, there's nobody back there to feed calls to me via a distant connection. So what you need to do, if you want to get in touch with the program, is reach me on Skype. And the account to reach on Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, all lowercase. If you've never done that before, dial in, click in, whatever we do now. Send me a contact request. I'll confirm it, and you'll be on the program straight away. Now, I wasn't kidding. We are up to our armpits in morans. And one potential nominee, I suppose, is kind of us. We. Because we are certainly being played for morans. Assumptions are being made that we are morans. What do I mean? Well, the for-profit media are positively giddy because a couple of members of Congress, a couple of senators in particular, Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee and Republican Lindsey Graham Cracker. Mom, Lindsey Graham's in the closet and he won't come out. Of South Carolina, have said that they're going to throw Grover Norquist and his stupid no-tax pledge under the bus. They never should have signed the damn thing in the first place. We understand that. But it plays with the hoi polloi. Oh, we're going to lower your taxes, and someday you're going to be rich, Cephas. No, you're not. No, you're not. But people like Graham and Corker and a few others are beginning to say, hey, you know, screw this. And Saxby Chambliss, remember the guy who sleezed and slimed a Vietnam War hero who left limbs in Vietnam? Yeah. That's Saxby Chambliss. Morphed Max Cleland's face into the face of Osama bin Laden in a TV ad. Yeah, that Max. That's Saxby Chambliss. Well, Saxby has declared that he is no longer beholden to Grover Norquist either. And so between Saxby and Lindsey and Bob, and see, these are three Southern Republican senators. Well, the for-profit media are absolutely, they've got the vapors. Or the lumbago. I don't know. Because they're saying, see, the Republicans can be reasonable. See? Don't you believe it. Don't you, for one itsy-bitsy, teensy-tiny, miserable second, believe it. Because this position has been maneuvered in such a way as to make it possible for the Repiglicans to take away the last of what we've got. To assault Medicare, to assault Medicaid, and in the immortal words of Richard B. Dick, before he dicks you, Cheney, tell us to go F ourselves. This is a Trojan horse. This is the snake in the bed. This is the passage from George Snuffleupagus talking to Lindsey Graham Cracker yesterday. You might find it interesting. See if you, I mean, Because I listen to this and it's like, I don't believe it for a minute. You tell me if you do.
Well, what I would say to Grover Norquist is that the sequester destroys the United States military. According to our own Secretary of Defense, it would be shooting ourselves in the head. You'd have the smallest army since 1940, the smallest navy since 1915, the smallest air force in the history of the country. So sequestration must be replaced. I'm willing to generate revenue. It's fair to ask my party to put revenue on the table. We're below historic averages. I will not raise tax rates to do it. I will cap deductions. If you cap deductions around the $30,000, $40,000 range, you can raise $1 trillion in revenue. And the people who lose their deductions are their upper-income Americans. But to do this, I just don't want to promise a spending cut. So entitlement reforms. Republicans always put revenue on the table. Democrats always promise to cut.
Wait a minute. Did you hear that? All that talk about we're going to close loopholes. This dumb bastard isn't going to. No, he's not going to let the Bush tax cuts expire. He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't have any choice. But they're trying to negotiate themselves into a position of appearing somehow a little bit not on the brown acid. Well, we can have reform of like tax deductions and stuff. But even though the for-profit media is getting, getting all the throw the panties at Elvis on the stage over this kind of stuff, there's no there. Back up, Lindsay.
Around the $30,000, $40,000 range, you can raise $1 trillion in revenue, and the people who lose their deductions are their upper-income Americans. But to do this, I just don't want to promise a spending cut, so I want entitlement reforms.
I want entitlement reforms. That means he doesn't want you. Well, it's not that he doesn't want you to. He wants to substantially reduce the likelihood of you collecting, you becoming eligible for Medicare. Well, I think if we could make Medicare fiscally sound if we raise the eligibility age to 112. You remember Lloyd Blankfein from last week? Well, Medicare and Social Security were not designed to help people who were going to live another 25 years. The average lifespan has gone up. What are those working slobs thinking that they can just go to the doctor? That they need to get sick and die. I want entitlement reform, says Lindsey Graham Cracker.
Well, I think that's a good idea, Bob. That means that he'll work for free.
He could work for free. He's already rich. It's working people. It is working people that are getting the shaft here. It's people that have actually paid into this system. You see, at its core, this objection to Medicare is that, the rich don't feel like it really benefits them in any way. I mean, people on Medicare, they're already past their, productive years. So that means they can no longer be abused in the workplace. So I don't want to just close loopholes. I want entitlement reform.
Republicans always put revenue on the table. Democrats always promise to cut spending. Well, we never cut spending. What I'm looking for is more revenue for entitlement reform before the end of the year.
I want to ask Senator Durbin about that. But let me
more revenue for entitlement reform. That's the swap. We will not. He's already said he won't raise taxes when the one thing that needs to happen is taxes need to be raised. But they'll monkey with the tax code a little bit as long as they get to make sure that you can't go to the doctor when you're old. I wouldn't fall for that on the Carnival Midway. Would you? I mean, Jesus, at least if you pay a dollar for the three squirrely old plastic darts, you've got at least a million to one chance that all three of them are going to bust a balloon. This one is a straight-up loser. No, but let's check back in with George Snuffleupagus for a minute.
I'll ask you one more time on Grover Norquist, because he's had some tough words for you. Yeah. In the end, he said you're not going to go through on this promise to raise revenues because you, quote, like being a senator. Your response?
Well, before we get Lindsey's response, Jesus, the nerve of that man. I guess he's in this town somewhere. It kind of makes me feel creepy that I'm even, you know, sharing the corporate limits with him. Or, I don't know, maybe he lives out on, crippled Fawn Lane somewhere in some, I don't know. But, God, is it just clear now who Grover Norquist is? Yeah, I don't think he's going to go raising no revenues no way. Because, you know, he likes being senator. I mean, that's like the guy that comes around your little, you know, the newsstand and says, yeah, you know, it's funny how all of these newspapers are made out of paper. It'd be a shame if a spark was to hit them and they was to all go up in flames. I'd hate to see your business burn down. It's extortion. It is absolutely extortion. But then again, he's a Republican. I'm surprised. Yeah, you like being a senator. It'd be terrible if somebody was to, I don't know, get a crowbar, Lindsey, and, pry that closet door open. You know, it's a good thing you was born with 10 fingers and 10 toes, because you need all 20 just to keep the closet door closed. Thank you, Michael Cooley. Be a real shame there, Lindsey, if we was to talk about your boyfriend. You like being senator, don't you, Lindsey?
I love being a senator, and I want to be a senator that matters for the state of South Carolina, the country. When you're $16 trillion in debt, the only pledge we should be making to each other is to avoid becoming Greece. And Republicans should put revenue on the table. We're this far in debt. We don't generate enough revenue. Capping deductions will help generate revenue. Raising tax rates will hurt job creation.
So in other words, his answer is, please don't hurt me, Grover. He wants a deal that's going to, I mean, there are some things that everything Lindsey Graham says here are predicated on. He will not raise taxes. Now, one of two things is happening in his mind. If the Bush tax cuts expire, that's not a tax hike. That is taxes returning to the rates that they were previously set at when they were artificially lowered by the Bush administration. So he can, in his mind, say, we didn't raise taxes. Or he wants another one of those compromise, collapse, fall apart and retreat deals that one so often got from the Obama administration in the first 4 years. You know, like the first extension of the Bush tax cuts, they think they're going to get another one. And for all we know, might. It's a little nerve-wracking. Because we don't know how far we'll be sold down the river. Because Dick Durbin of Illinois, the majority whip, was on this program as well. And he made mouth noises about how Democrats need to talk about cutting spending and entitlement reform. Man, I've got... I, I've, I've gotten to the point where every time I hear entitlement reform, my gut's twist in a knot. As I have remarked on in previous incarnations of this program, and this is not the poor, poor, pitiful Bob portion of the program, I'm among the millions of Americans who are, in fact, uninsured. And that has real implications. Dealing with them now, you've heard the show. Need to get the gallbladder out. Can't get the gallbladder out until I go make sure everything's okay with the cardiologist. Can't go to the cardiologist until I've got $1,500 cash on the barrel head to hand them. Hence, I can't get the gallbladder out. Lather, rinse, repeat. I'm one of the millions of uninsured people in the United States of America, and I'll be turning, hopefully, 50 next month, in 2 months. And you begin to look at 65 there thinking, hey, if I can hang out 15 years, I can at least go to the doctor in 15. No, 17. And clowns, closet clowns, like Lindsey Graham, think it's okay to maybe run my eligibility up to 70. 75. 75, I got 75. 75, I got 75. 75 once. 75 twice. Oh, I got 80. It's depressing. Whatever happened to all that draw a line in the sand bullshit? Is Medicare not worth fighting for? Is there nobody out there on our side who will say, no, let's talk about lowering the Medicare eligibility age. Let's talk about enrolling people in Medicare the moment they are born. Because just because the Affordable Care Act passed some constitutional muster before the Supreme Court of the United States, my neighbors, and the rats thereon, does not mean we stop talking about universal single-payer health care. Oh, hell no. We need to continue that conversation. A note coming in from Michael. Subject line, the graham cracker. New nickname to try out for Lindsay, Lohan Graham. Lindsay Lohan Graham. we'll let that one percolate a little bit. But in the end, while it seems like there's some bet hedging going on, yeah, Waggy in the chat room, let my people go, you know, to the doctor. But inside this little, what's being portrayed as a palace coup with regard to the Republicans' master, Grover Norquist, you know, when somebody is like that, and they're, you know, one of those capo di tutti capo types like Grover Norquist is, when you pay him obeisance, when you are a vassal to him, when you are a serf, when you are a varlet, a churl, do you wake up every morning having signed his little no-tax pledge and just look at yourself in the mirror and turn away from the mirror as quickly as you possibly can because it's so embarrassing? I think I would. I couldn't stand to look at myself knowing that I had agreed to sell out my own government, popular government, government of the people, by the people, and for the people, for one guy over his extortion threats and his protection racket. But maybe it's possible that a few people, a few Republicans, have begun to get up on their own hind legs . But there's a bit of theater and con artistry going on here. Here's one of the cons. Another one. Bob Corker, mentioned earlier, from Tennessee. He was getting quizzed by Nora O'Donnell on NBC.
Here, are you prepared, as others are doing, to sort of say, I'm going to forego
CBS.
The pledge because it is outdated and the country's problems are too big?
Well, I'm not obligated on the pledge. I made Tennesseans aware. I was just elected that the only thing I'm honoring is the oath that I take when I serve, when I'm sworn in this January. So, look, I've laid out a bill, Charlie, that's 242 pages long. In other words, it's not long. It's got $1 trillion in revenues. Obviously, it has real entitlement reform, which is the other side of this equation.
Let me ask you.
Oh, there it is again. It's got some real entitlement reform. Want to go to the doctor? Wait till you're 90. Actually, Corker's little scheme includes the at least partial privatization of Medicare. Nice, huh? Yeah, we're going to make some money off of it. We're going to make this work in the market. Can't just be laying around doing good for people. I'm going to privatize it. You know, because when we privatize it, then we can run some executive salaries up, and then the administrative costs for Medicare will go from 1 or 2 or 3% up to, you know, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. He's at the 20. Hit it. Touchdown. We've done some real meaningful. Yeah. All right. Yeah, this is from CBS, and this is Nora O'Donnell with her question now.
Would you be willing to also raise the capital gains rate?
Well, you know, I'm not the negotiator sitting at the table. I'm open to solving this problem. And what I've done, Nora, in a 242-page bill, is show both the White House and Republican negotiators that this technically is very easy to do. It's much easier to go ahead and decide what we're going to do now than to try to craft some bill that lays out a process for us to do this next year. So, look, I think I've shown a willingness to compromise and solve this problem, put this in the rearview mirror, start next year focusing on the greatness of this nation.
Yeah, put this in the rearview mirror, Bob Corker. You know, the rearview mirror, like the rearview mirror that Clark Griswold never looked at in the first Vacation movie when Imogene Coca's little dog was bouncing along on the pavement in the rearview mirror. Yeah, those tread marks, those skid marks are going to be over you and me in the rearview mirror. Look, this is pretty simple. Let the damned Bush tax cuts expire. Then let the Congress of the United States do its job. And if they want to give middle-class tax relief, that's fine. If they want to give the Bush tax cuts all over again, screw them. The rich can pay, and we'll pay too. You know, I know nobody else believes it, but isn't tax paying kind of a patriotic thing? Isn't making it possible for us to have roads and bridges, for us to have giant photographs of the Supreme Court, hanging over the front of the Supreme Court. Job creating under all instances. Isn't that a good thing? You'd think so, wouldn't you? But underneath all of this, there's one more little chess game at work. Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs, he says, every time you hear, he said, that's the end game. Every time you hear entitlement reform, just think of it as code for Medicare privatization. Because that's the eventual end game, don't you think? Well, for some it is, for some Republicans, and damn it all, some Democrats too, and that's what's frightening. Yeah, getting rid of Medicare. It's an ambition. It's a dream. It's a fantasy. It's something that they go to shady little stores and go into cubicles and put tokens in slots. And yeah, entitlement reform. Huh. Right? Marty pointing out that tax paying is only a patriotic thing for those making less than $250,000 a year. Hear, hear. But there is, you know, there's a game within a game here, and that is this. Will Grover Norquist come after the people that violate his so-called pledge? And what's he going to do? Back the Democrat? Or is he going to find some new freak show to run in the primary? Well, if they beat Grover Norquist is licked. But if Grover Norquist wins, then that's a net gain for the Democrats? So, yeah, let's you and him fight. Couldn't happen to a nicer couple of folks. The Republican Party, Grover Norquist. I mean, let's not have any of this Marcus of Queensberry rules BS either. I want y'all kicking and gouging and a scratching and a hair pulling, kidney punching and toe stomping. Yeah, right. Get it on. Because we got to sort this out, whether the Republican Party, which is largely comprised of freaks anyway, whether the Republican Party is going to be controlled by a racketeer, and Grover Norquist is a racketeer by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, yeah, I know he's not going to back away from the pledge because he likes being a senator. Hey, what's this mean? It means Lindsey Graham cracker sleeps with the fishes. So by all means, follow up on your threats, Grover. By all means, please do. But that's just the front end of More in Monday. Oh, dear Lord, that's just one story. Well, with a couple of stories within stories. Morans? We got morans. We got lots and lots of morans. You probably got some morans of your own. I had a note from Ron and Raleigh right before showtime. And I generally don't criticize, and this is not criticism. This is Ron's nomination for Moran Monday. But he says, Bob, I'd like to nominate Tom Hartman as a Moran. Oh, Ron. Today on his program, once again, he declared atheism a religion. Oh, please. Through some of the most tortured, circular, nonsensical logic possible, He flew in the face of every dictionary and encyclopedia definition I've read and smugly declared the lack of religious belief a religion. In his world, the only way to be a non-religious atheist is to not say anything as religion horns in on the public square, because if you protest, you are evangelizing, and that makes your lack of belief a religion. What? Yes, it makes my head hurt, too. Sometimes, and this is one where Mr. Hartman's veneer of humble, self-effacing every man gives way to a know-it-all arrogance that's hard to take. I've had people hand me that in the past. Well, atheism's a religion just like any other. No, it's not. Atheism is a refusal to participate in religion. Atheism is a refusal to participate in the essential requirement of any religion, believing. Believing is something that you do absent of knowing. It's that time of year. Here's a good example. We know. Scientists know. Ordinary human beings with an IQ above freezing know that human females cannot give birth without having been in some wise inseminated. I mean, there's a fancy word for it, parthenogenesis. Human females are not capable of parthenogenesis. Female sharks are. Maybe some female frogs. There's full-on transgenderism in the seahorse community. But human females can't have a baby without somebody helping. I mean, we've got modern technology now. Little pipettes and petri dishes and the occasional turkey baster. But even though everybody knows that human females, not now, not ever, at least back as long as we've been human, they don't just spontaneously get pregnant. But we're about to go into a whole orgy of holiday celebrations based on that very principle. That a little Palestinian girl, minding her own business one night, yea, verily, the Holy Spirit did visit her and did come all over her. Amen. And you get a religion out of it. Well, see, you can believe that little virgin girls can have babies, but you cannot know that. And that's the distinction. Relying on what we can know and eschewing as harmful what we can believe, well, eschewing the belief structure that involves the absolute abandonment of the mind, that's religion. On the other hand, not participating in a system that compels you to believe in direct opposition to what your mind knows to be reality, that's religion. And refusing to participate in religion is not a religion unto itself. This is not some freaking Rush song where even if you choose to not to decide, you still have made a choice. This is not that. So I didn't hear the segment or anything, but I understand what Ron's getting at, because it's incredibly frustrating to hear people try, and the reason people try to assert that religion that atheism is a religion is because they're uncomfortable with their own. You know, just because an atheist looks at a theist and says, you know, you're freaking pathetic, that doesn't mean that they're espousing a religious doctrine. What they're espousing is an opinion and not a belief. Really? You believe people who are physically dead, no heart function and no brain function, just zzz, flatline, can lay around for 3 days and get up and go for a walk? You believe that? You don't know it. In fact, you know the exact opposite. That's not a religion. No. No way is that a religion. Meanwhile, Kevin, writing in from Colorado Springs, says, my nominee for Moran Monday would also be that same Dick Durbin for uttering the words entitlement reform as a Democrat. In my Democratic Party, he just got booted out. You know what? Let's take a run at this. Is it possible to be a good progressive, a good liberal, and believe in entitlement reform? First of all, I don't believe. There's that word, believe. I reject referring to them as entitlements because they make it sound like something that some low-down, no-account, the welfare huckster, you know, that's the way they talk. No, they just think they're entitled to a free lunch. Right? But you could be a good progressive, a good liberal, and talk about entitlement reform in terms of more money for food stamps, lowering the retirement age, lowering the Medicare eligibility age, expanding the eligibility parameters for Medicaid. That would be entitlement reform too. Wouldn't that be fun to see that debate take place? I got your entitlement reform right here. We're going to lower the Social Security retirement age to 55, and the Medicare eligibility age is going to come down with it. We're going to raise the Social Security ceiling to include every penny everybody makes. You know, that's for you millionaires, not just 100,000. If you make $50 million a year, you're going to pay Social Security tax on all of that. We're going to institute a Wall Street transaction tax. And we're going to use all of those monies for entitlement reform. And we're going to make them better. Of course, there'd be a run on smelling salts as every blasted right-winger in the Congress had a case of the fantods. But it would be well worth it to see. We'll take a little break and come back. To reach the program this evening and this week, you have to use Skype. The Skype handle here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Just send a request through, or if we're already contacts on each other's list, just make the call. And we'll get the conversation radio going because this is conversation radio. Otherwise, filibobster. You know how I feel about that. This is conversation radio. This is an ongoing experiment in the American dialogue. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is listener-supported radio. We've been at this for about an hour, and no contributions have come through. And we're $500 from meeting this month's fundraising goal. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. That's how come this is listener-supported conversation radio. This is, in fact, The Horn. And that's the wrong song. There's the right song. Yeah, what do you feel like? We'll be back.
Fool. She took all my money. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed, we are back. Agnes and I.
I miss you. I love you.
You got to speak up into the microphone, dear.
Well, I would if you'd move your head, Bob.
I got a big old head. But she knows that. We've been married almost 20 years. She'd have divorced me by now if my big old alien head was that much of a problem. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We are broadcasting live from Capitol Hill. Broadcasting live from Capitol Hill, the headquarters of the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign. And our days are spent working the halls of Congress. And, our evenings are spent like this. Gentle reminder, like I said, this is all listener-supported. And we are about $500 to go before, in order just to meet our $2,500 old goal before the end of the month. Okay, so let's, look, it's the lady cab driver. It's Tracy calling in. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm okay, I think.
Well, yeah. I've been listening off and on today about all this stuff that was happening over... Oh, how was your Thanksgiving, by the way?
Oh, we had a lovely one.
Yes.
You know,
that's
just
awesome.
Traditional stuff. I don't think the sweet potato croquettes have ever been better, Tracy. That's something my mom made. It's just mashed up sweet potatoes. We add a little bit of pineapple to it, wrap them around a marshmallow, roll them in butter, dip them in butter, and roll them in cornflakes and bake them.
Marshmallows.
Yeah, only this year we added a wrinkle.
And what was the wrinkle?
The wrinkle was using the toasted coconut-covered marshmallows. And,
they
were good.
See, okay, you lost me. Here's the thing about me and coconut. Love the flavor of coconut, but I can't deal with the texture. I will drink the hell out of piña coladas. And I love, frying stuff in coconut oil and all that. But the texture of coconut flakes? Not so much.
Yeah, but these little toasted coconut marshmallows, they're all kind of crispy and toasty, so by the time they're done baking and melting inside the sweet potatoes, you don't even know they're there, but you get that little kick of flavor like in the coconut rum.
That's so funny that you're talking about marshmallows and sweet potatoes because, of course, this was my girlfriend's first Black Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
And here she is, my little Jewish girlfriend, I did all the cooking. She did the turkey, which, by the way, was the most amazing thing. I bet she did it with melted butter and beer, but she put a cheesecloth over the turkey, and that's how she baked it. And I'm telling you, it was the most beautiful thing, and I don't even like turkey, but oh, my God. But anyway, so I was telling her what I was making, mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, candy yams. And so the candy yams came up to, you put marshmallows in those?
Well, yeah, you wrap the...
No.
Yes.
No. Very few. I don't know too many black people, at least in my family, we don't do marshmallows in our sweet potatoes. Our sweet potatoes, our candy yams is basically a sweet potato pie without the crust.
Yummy.
Those are my candy yams, and
yummy.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
was
my
good,
sister but... my sister does some sweet potatoes with that are kind of sweet. They're like the middle of a sweet potato pie with pecans in them and stuff. And
I do brown sugar, vanilla, nutmeg, cinnamon, and butter.
That's a winner for me. I mean that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just kind of let it cook. Are you ready for this? I made greens for the first time. how I, you know, because I've always been, let me backtrack. I've tried greens, to do green collards before, and then it turned out to be some kind of a soup. And so my mom's like, she talked me through it. You know, I had some smoked turkey, got the water going with the smoked turkey and the garlic and the red pepper flakes and the pseudo suckers in, and I did fresh string beans. And let me tell you, they were a hit. I let that smoked turkey boil pretty much half the day. I had 30 people in my house, Bob. I still don't know how I did it. I do not know. But it was probably one of the best Thanksgiving ever because I made, are you ready for this, a whipped cream pound cake.
Ooh.
It was that and a peach cobbler. And I made homemade ice cream. I made vanilla ice cream and pumpkin spice ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Made the ice cream?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, you did it up.
But wait,
you'd never done greens before.
Mm-mm.
Well, tell me about the greens. I mean, did they work out?
Let me tell you, they were just shocked and amazed when I said, this was my first time doing greens. Right. And that was only my second time doing fresh string beans also. So, my family was very, very pleased with me. And then, you know, it was just a fabulous weekend. I boycotted Black Friday.
Good, good.
I said, there's no way in hell. Because I'm listening to all the money that Walmart made these past few days. And I'm thinking to myself, you bastards. You know, you guys are talking about the economy and stuff like that. But none of that money that you made as far as your sales, as the sales taxes are concerned, are going back to my state. What about yours there, Bob?
No.
Okay. I'm just wondering how, you know, they talk about, because I guess the CEOs and all them, their paychecks this year was something in the millions.
Oh, yeah, that's walking around money.
Yes, that's that mad money, that pocket change, like, or what my grandmother used to call pin money.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking to myself, you made all this money. Not one dime of the sales tax that the people who shop at your store pay is coming back into my state. But then again, since you pay your employees so poorly, the money that my tax dollars are going to make sure that your employees and their families can eat because they're using food stamps and using Medi-Cal, so in my state anyway, so they can have benefits.
Right, and there, you know, there's something else to be borne in mind here, Tracy. It gets worse. Maybe not in California, but in a lot of states that have these tax dodges where they lure business into the states by providing tax relief, what it ultimately winds up, I mean, for instance, Rick Smith, my buddy here on the Horn, has been talking extensively about the plan in Pennsylvania that would have rebated employee state taxes back to the company. In other words, you know, you work for the company and you pay in, you have withholdings every month.
Right. Right.
For your state taxes. Well, the state tax department would then turn around and rebate the money you paid in taxes back to the company for giving you a job.
Excuse me, what?
Yeah, isn't that just mind-boggling?
Wow. See, all they can do is just go, see, wow. See, that's the kind, and then you watch the news and you see people, you know, fist fights breaking out, and, you know, people
interestingly enough, all of the firearms stories from this past Friday came from Walmart. One of them, oddly enough, mm-hmm, at a mm-hmm shopping center in Texas called South Park. The irony was that. Dude punched other dude in the face, and then second dude drew his peacemaker and pointed it at first dude's face. I mean, the guy who punched the guy in the face, you know, that's just rude. That's you kind of get what's coming there, but it's,
you know, and you sit there, because I guess there's only one employee in the whole city of Chicago that works for Walmart, that says, you know what, I'm done. I can't work with you. I can't do this anymore. This is just, you cannot. You know, he's making $8.75 an hour, and then they have the nerve to cut his hours. Really?
Yeah, and of course, and it's not just Walmart. I mean, there are other employers all over the country saying, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to cut your hours down to part-time so we don't have to give you none of that Obamacare. Because we wouldn't want you to turn into a communist. We don't like employing communists. And if you get communist health care, that Obamacare is communist. You know, he's a Muslim Kenyan socialist
Kenya,
with deep-seated hatred
socialist,
of white people.
Atheist.
Yeah, if you was to get that Obamacare, you'd probably be a communist. And so we're going to make you part-time so we don't have to. So we don't have to watch you turn into a communist. It's a horrible thing.
We're looking out for you.
But now I don't know if you caught this in all the Black Friday stories. But lo and behold, John Boehner has declared that he wants the funding for Obamacare to be on the table for the negotiations about the so-called fiscal cliff.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
No. Serious as a heart attack.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it makes you more than just a little bit.
This is something that's already passed.
Yeah.
And all this, and they're still playing games. They just,
but
it is,
it's already past constitutional muster, Tracy. But lo and behold, it's going back to the courts. I don't know if you caught this or not.
No.
Yeah. It's almost too much to bear. Horst posted this on my Facebook page. And lo and behold, the Supreme, this is from Talking Points Memo, Supreme Court revives a lawsuit against Obamacare on religious grounds.
Religious grounds?
Yeah, because, you know, when you go to the doctor's office on Obamacare, they make you deny Christ. You know that's part of it, right? The Supreme Court has reopened a challenge to key provisions of the Affordable Care Act, one that was dismissed by a lower court last year on technical grounds, but could now become the staging ground for a new judicial fight over a piece of the law known as the employer mandate. So the Supreme Court said, okay, yeah, the individual mandate, yeah, that can, yeah, but we're going to get rid of, we're not going to make you cover poor people. But now the employer mandate, Liberty University, Jerry Falwell University, you knew.
Where my mother went.
Yeah.
Where she's still going.
Jerry Falwell University is suing to overturn the employer mandate because they say it violates their religious freedom. Because if, let's say, some Pakistani Muslim who happens to work for them, and let's say she gets birth control, well, that might cause an abortion. And Jesus wouldn't like us anymore. No kidding, really. They claim it the law's requirements that large organizations provide employees insurance could lead to the forced funding of abortion. And of course, it's completely bullshit. I mean, there's no reality to it. But it's going back to the Fourth Circuit for a ruling on the merits, at which point it will climb back up to the Supreme Court, and either the Supreme Court will or will not hear it. I don't understand. How can these followers of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, who wanted everybody to be a little nicer to each other, that position, Tracy, is nothing short of satanic, if you ask me.
Well, it's the same thing, like, you know, I think we've had this conversation about back in the day when Medicare was first introduced to the country, and it was supposed to be a rollout program starting with the seniors and then working its way down. And then, as you pointed out, the southern, hold on a second, Kitty, can you write that address down for me, please? The southern contingency were like, oh no, we can't have that because, you know, our folks might get it, you know, and we can't have doctors getting Medicare and stuff like that. No. It wouldn't be proven. You know, that might mean that we actually live in a country where men are people.
I need to ask an off topic.
But then again,
I need to ask you an off topic question, Tracy. I just got a note in from Sandra, who said that she just tried to dial in on Skype, and they wanted money for connecting to this Skype account.
I just dialed the number, and I don't have any money on my trust. I have no money on my Skype account, so I just did dial, and that's it. That's all I did.
Yeah, Skype to Skype, right?
Huh? Now that I know I can use Skype.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to check.
Because I opened it up on my app, and I just hit dial, you know, and it connected me right away. So I don't know, because I know once, the first couple of times I did it, you were already on, and I didn't have to do anything, and then this last couple of times, I actually had to hit, you know, the phone number or whatever, and it dialed your number. So you know me and these technological things, man. Don't be telling me, asking me stuff. What's wrong with you? Don't you know who you're dealing with? Don't you know that I take that back. I'm pretty good technologically. I just pretend not to be, because when you know,
yeah,
like
you just
my girls,
that,
like,
you just play
this,
that
like,
on
no.
the radio.
Huh?
Yeah, you just play that on the radio.
But
not knowing stuff.
I just I don't know. But yeah, I'm just listening, you know, because I found, back to the whole Walmart thing, I didn't realize until recently about the fact that they pay, that the sales tax that we pay to them goes back to them. They're supposed to be going to the state. I just find it reprehensible.
Well, look, I mean, I don't necessarily know that Walmart's engaged in that, but that movement is out there. That's the latest tax dodge. But remember, where Walmart's concerned, a long time ago, 10, 15 years ago, they got caught, Tracy. Walmart got caught taking out life insurance policies on their workers. Okay? They would take out a life insurance policy on their workers, and then they would they had a department in the home office that kept track of these policies, and you know, the people working never knew that this policy was on them, and so when they died, Walmart collected nothing to the family. They were term life insurance policies. Walmart took them out, paid on the front end, and that was non-taxable. And then life insurance proceeds are non-taxable too. So it was just a way of siphoning off money. This is a sleazy outfit, no doubt about it.
Well, it's the same, you know, about them using prison work, you know, companies that use prison workers for their products.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you had the people that died in that fire over the weekend in Bangladesh.
Oh, and then there was the gas explosion in Massachusetts.
What gas explosion? I missed that one.
Oh, there was a huge gas explosion in Springfield, Massachusetts. 18 people were hurt. Did tremendous amounts of damage. It turns out a gas company worker was the cause of it. The worker inadvertently punctured a gas line and caused the building to fill up with gas. And then along came a spark, and, well, you know how that works out.
What are you... Oh, God.
But no, we haven't gotten to the best... we haven't gotten to the best part.
But wait, there's more.
Yes, there is indeed more. And the, because the best part of this is that there is a freak, and I don't use that term lightly, you know me.
Mm-mm.
There's a freak out there. He's one of these people who's all worried about the fetuses, right? And
mm-hmm.
and the gay people, and you know, on and on like that. member of the religion industry, in other words. And he issued a press release, Tracy, praising God for the explosion because it blew up a strip joint.
Okay, see,
I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. It's, you know, sorry.
Okay.
A little hard. Oh. Yeah, I know. It's a little hard to stomach, isn't it?
Okay.
He said, we've been doing imprecatory prayer for God to strike down these heathens. We thank God that nobody was hurt, when in fact 18 people were seriously hurt.
But nobody of any consequence was hurt.
I guess, you know, nobody he cared about was hurt. I guess that's the standard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's unbearable. I guess I lost Tracy. Oh, there you are. No, there you are. Okay.
But it's just I'm stuttering because I just find it utterly fascinating that there are people like this that are allowed to breathe, and that these people are just, I don't get it. I mean, the whole fiscal cliff and all this. I'm just thinking about the fact that the country voted, and they voted a lot of these people out of office, and they're like, we want the country to work, okay? And we're tired of the hijinks and shenanigans. So you're sitting here trying to say that, you know, like you said, you believe in Jesus and stuff like this, but then you don't want to help your fellow man. So how are you a Christian? I don't understand. And, you know, you got this man praying that, you know, thanking God that something blew up. And not the damages that it was caused and the jobs that were lost and the property, you know, the people's homes or what have you. But you're praying for destruction.
Yeah. That's that peace that passeth all understanding, don't you know? Charming, isn't it? The coverage was over at Pam's House Blend. She's a blogger. She's a blogger of. She's been at it for a very long time, and she covers a lot of LGBT issues. And I mean, she had this guy dead to rights. I mean, it's in his own words. You know, we prayed for this to happen, so that everybody would know the majesty of the Lord God and that he does not approve of strippers.
Didn't they read in the Bible how Jesus comes out with, you know, prophets?
No. Among other things, they wouldn't know him if he showed up in church.
They missed that part.
Yeah, if they did meet him in church, they'd see if they couldn't get the authorities to carrying him out. Oh, here it is. Yeah. Okay, I remember now. Yeah, this is a guy named Scott Lively. Okay.
Scott Lively. Okay.
And he's behind the Kill the Gays bill in Uganda. This is what he said, Tracy. You're gonna love this. For about 2 years, I have been including imprecatory prayers in our church services and Bible studies at Holy Grounds Coffee House. No, really, that's where their church is, Holy Grounds Coffee House. Imprecatory prayers are Old Testament prayers for the defeat and destruction of the enemies of God and his people. A New Testament variation on these prayers is to ask God to save the people that destroy the institutions. Our prayers, part of our 7-year campaign to re-Christianize the city of Springfield, Massachusetts, have included an appeal to God to destroy the works of Satan in this city. We have specifically included the strip clubs in these prayers. Yesterday, this three-story Scores strip club on Worthington Street was completely obliterated in a gas explosion right down to the ground. I believe this was the hand of God at work in answer to our prayers.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday yet or anything, but I got to ask a question there, Tracy. This Moran, would he rather that his God was busy blowing up strip clubs or, I don't know,
bringing rain to drought-stricken countries or...
feeding the poor, feeding the hungry, the visiting the sick, housing the homeless,
clothing the naked. When I was 50, he visited me.
Yeah, all that Book of Matthew stuff. Because I've read the Gospels up and down, backwards, sideways.
Blessed are the poor.
And I have never seen blessed is the guy who prays for the strip club to blow up. Mind-boggling, isn't it? But that's American Christianity. Let's deal with it.
And like I said, I can't wait to tell my mother about the Liberty University thing. I don't relish in telling her stuff about Liberty University. Well, maybe a part of me does. And so she just shakes her head and, you know, like, oh, God. And I'm like, well, you know, this is where you're getting your... But fortunately, she's not an idiot. And she's getting out of it what she needs to get out of it, because even she, because they have these discussion groups, you know, offices, she's taking a support center lab group online, and they have these discussion groups, and she's just like, really, you guys? What kind of Christians are you? You know, because a lot of Bible thumpers are, you know, of the fashion of, you know, Falwell and Robertson, and, you know, all gay people and should die, and, you know, we'll let a few black people live, but, you know, but they better not be gay.
Oh, no, because that's a double whammy.
Mm-hmm. Or women. Well, we'll let some women live because we do have certain, you know, what is the population of the earth. So we'll let some women live, and, you know, but we'll keep them chained to the stove in the house and barefoot and pregnant.
Right.
And once they are no longer able to be their children, then we'll get rid of them too.
Yeah, and don't be getting uppity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So once the uterus is no longer functioning, then we'll get rid of them too.
Well, you know, just make them wait until they're 90 years old before they can have Medicare.
Oh, right. Keep them working until they're 90 and about to drive it in at any given moment. I was listening to this commentator today about the whole Walmart debacle, you know, and how, you know, nobody protested. Like I said, I stayed home. I absolutely refused. I mean, back in the day, I used to go do black. I mean, I think a lot of this is because I'm still battle scarred from when I used to work in retail and have to. But even then, I think the earliest that we opened was maybe 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. the day before Thanksgiving, you know, like a couple of hours before the mall normally opened. You know, nothing, it was early, but it was nothing ridiculous. But in the last couple of years, I mean, for God's sake, Kmart was open at 6 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day. I guess they closed and then they reopened. Walmart opened at 8. I guess Target opened at 8 or 9 or something. That's like, when do people, I remember when I was a kid, and you're not that much older than me, nothing was open on Thanksgiving. Nothing, except for the liquor store and the gas station.
Yeah,
and
you know, necessities.
About Christmas, man, nothing worse than nothing worse on Christmas Day to wake up and have all these cool toys and they need the batteries and mom and dad forgot the batteries. So you have to wait for the day after Christmas to play with your
right,
cool
because
toys.
That, because right, because that's a holiday tradition, too.
Right, you just forget the batteries. I think my parents did it on purpose just to mess with them. Because how can you forget the batteries? Come on, really? But now you can just go.
Apparently, it's very easy.
It is easy.
I got burned by that as a child, and as a grown up, we've always made sure that there were batteries.
Right. Yeah. But But now you can just, you know, just like I said, the store is open at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, you don't have to wait. You only have to wait a few hours and go get your toy, you know, your batteries.
Right.
I mean, you know, like I said, I'm still that crazy Christian, and I still believe that, you know, in this, you know, time with family and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, I grew up in California, but we're definitely not a Bible Belt state. But, my God, nothing was open on the holiday. Easter Sunday? No.
Yeah, forget
nothing.
That.
Nothing. Now, I mean, I think on Easter, Easter the malls are still closed. Still on Easter Sunday, but Christmas Day stuff is open, and Thanksgiving. I just don't. I mean, it boggles the mind. It really, really does.
Of course, on Thanksgiving Day, I have to admit, it's become a tradition in my family to sort of guess the day ahead. What ingredient will Dad forget this morning? What ingredient will Dad realize only on Thanksgiving morning that he cannot finish Thanksgiving dinner without? Yeah, it'll be butter or buttermilk. You know, nothing exotic.
Well, for me, one year I was making mac and cheese, right? And I had everything in my shopping cart, and I'm staring, and I'm like, there's something missing. Yeah, I didn't have the macaroni.
That takes a big bite out of mac and cheese. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, we could have had this really great cheese sauce. But I was like, oh, dude, Tracy, come on, seriously, you forgot the macaroni? I mean, at least I hadn't left the store. I had not left the store.
Yeah, that's one of those turn and run. Right.
One of those, it's like I'm sitting there going, scratching my head, what am I missing? And this only goes to prove that as I get older, I need to go to the store list. You know, when we were younger, we could have those things in our brain.
Everything. Oh, no. Everything is on a list now. I trust my mind for nothing anymore.
And I'm getting at that age, and it saddens me, you know, to no end, but
yeah,
it's at that point where I'm like, damn, really, I'm getting to that point where if I do not write it down, I get to the store, and I'm like, oh. So now I send myself texts on my phone. Okay, Tracy, get this. And like, I think it was getting the macaroni for the mac and cheese. I think that finally did it. But yeah, I'm getting to that point. And, you know, I'm on the upside of 50. And I'm going to start taking ginkgo. What's the other one that you use for your memory? Ginkgo and I can't remember.
Obviously, you should be taking it. Hey, Tracy, it's good to hear from you, dear. I'm glad y'all had a good Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'm guessing as hard as you worked, it was probably a little bit like it was for us. Thanksgiving dinner always tastes better when it's leftovers on Friday.
You work so
hard to get the dinner together, you can't enjoy it.
You can't. The best part about Thanksgiving for me, Bob, was watching people eat my food and telling me, when are you going to start your own catering business?
Aww.
That was the best part of the whole evening.
Oh, yeah, and that's a high compliment, too.
It's like, one of my cousins said, quit playing and just start your own catering business. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, but it's something that I enjoy doing. My whole world lights up when I cook. It just brings me joy. So, you know, who knows? Maybe one day, I don't know, maybe something small, just my dessert, like my banana pudding and my cakes and my pies, something like that. I don't know if I want to do a full-on catering business. I'm getting old. That's just a lot of work that I don't want. But in any event, it was always awesome listening and talking to you. And, you know, Christmas is around the corner. How many more shopping days?
Don't
roll your eyes at me, Bob.
Don't start.
I know you do.
I mean, I just...
That was not...
No, that's just brutal. That's brutal.
Had to do it. I didn't mess with you and talk about the deep fried shrimp tacos.
Oh,
so I had to say something.
No. See, you're trying to sneak them in. I know how you operate. Tracy, you have a good evening, dear. We'll talk soon. The lady cab driver, that is Tracy. And you too can make Skype work for you, or at least we hope. That was kind of a new thing to be hearing from Sandra, that Skype tried to shake her down for money? What? Yeah, no. It should just be a Skype call from from your Skype handle or my Skype handle. Now if you try to call a phone number, then they want money. I don't know, because Jeremy wrote in from Vermont and said, pretty sure, Bob, that you get one free test call or a call with Skype, and then it asks you to add credits. Yeah, that's if you're, he said, I had the same issue myself not too long ago and thought it had been fixed for free Skype to Skype. Maybe not. So, you know, try again if you want to, by all means. And we are at the top of the hour, and we will take a little break and come back. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, listener-supported progressive liberal conversation radio. And you're welcome to join in. That's what makes it conversation radio. This is The Horn, and we will be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
But once there was a time when Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, that phone number is not really the phone number. If you want to get in touch with the program this evening, you simply connect via Skype to Bob Kincaid Horn. And I think I may have sorted out the mystery between our chat room moderator, Sparky, and me. Sparky is, of course, also the moderator of the Friday Night Malloy Horn Skype group chat. And I wasn't showing as visible. I changed that. I'm green now. Super green. Quick, what movie does that come from? But no, the horn icon is green now, so maybe that makes a difference. But anyway, Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype handle if you want to tune in. Had a note earlier from our good buddy Andy out in Northern California. And he said, with regard to Ron's nomination earlier this evening, he said, "Mr. Bob, I second Ron's choice. Mr. Hartman has a habit of trying to be too politically correct, so he goes off the progressive reservation. When you've got your head as far up the rear end of the Democratic Party as Mr. Hartman and have to keep the military-industrial complex happy, you will say some things that are utter nonsense to a critically thinking progressive. Programs carried on Armed Forces Radio, so he has to, well, be stupid a good portion of the time to keep our warmongering corporate Democratic Party leadership happy. Thank you, Ron. Good choice." Andy adds, "I do agree with you on entitlement reform. The phrase is a repiglic and talking point, right? The reform should be expanding and strengthening the programs, increasing the $106,000 income limit for Social Security, and providing more benefits and lowering eligibility requirements." You know, it's funny, isn't it, how we can see that? But the people who don't rely on things like Medicare and Social Security can't. How is that? Let's see. With regard to my little mention of the great big photograph of the Supreme Court that now hangs in front of the Supreme Court, Jim says, "In no way did said funding come from DOD. I didn't say it came from DOD. I said Congress controls the purse strings of the Supreme Court budget. That's obvious. But what I was talking about was the great big picture and the technology used to print it on a giant drop cloth. And, yeah, if that was some little print shop here in town or, you know, over the state line in Maryland or over the Commonwealth line in Virginia, yeah, okay, good on them. But for technology like that, yeah, you almost think it is some sort of super sneaky drone technology. Yeah, Jim says funding authorization is approved by Congress. Funding authorization approved by Congress goes through the General Accounting Office. I'll always think of it as the General Accounting Office. Remember the Orwellian language freaks from the Bush administration changed it to the General Accountability Office? Oy. Into GSA and fence to a bid contractor. Like I said, the picture is up over at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you very kindly. Just got a note saying that one member of the Horn family has been calling Representative Norm Dix offices in Tacoma and Bremerton, Washington, on a regular basis, pleading for him to read and sign on to the AIC Act. Thank you very, very much. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we got. I always love getting notes from folks who've been listening for a while, and I've never heard from. Chris. Chris sent in a kind contribution not too long back, and I try to send thank you notes out. If I ever miss one, let me know. I try to be fairly diligent about that. But Chris said, I've been listening a couple of months via podcast, offline or on Stitcher. I particularly liked your commentaries on Bishop Willard. We really dislike that man. Ironically, we fit his mold, except the vast wealth, yet didn't vote for him. We pay a lot of taxes, receive no government aid, fully pay for our kids' college, etc. But we also realize that society has a responsibility to support and lift everyone up. Republicans don't get that. Half of a functioning society is a recipe for disaster. Keep up the good work. Well, thank you very kindly, Chris. And that, I don't know, maybe that may be the toaster phrase for tonight. The imaginary horn toasters that we give away from time to time. Half of a functioning society is a recipe for disaster. Now, there are several places to go, several availabilities, as it were, for this Moran Monday. Tracy mentioned the horrific fire in Bangladesh. 129 Bangladeshis died because of the incredibly lax safety conditions in the sweatshop. I'm sorry, garment factory. It was a horror. But never let it be said that in the midst of a horror born of avarice and greed, such as is the business model at Wally World, never let it be said that there's not going to be somebody out there over at Radio Rwanda, Fox News, who won't try to make it not the fault of people whose fault it was. What's the word I'm looking for? Obfuscation. In this case, our Moran obfuscator is one Charles Payne being interviewed by Neil Cavuto. Today, over at Radio Rwanda. Not going to read you the quote. I'm going to play you the quote, because I don't think I want these words coming out of my mouth.
You know, listen, it's one of these things. I don't think something like this will happen again. Don't think that the people in Bangladesh who perished didn't want or need those jobs as well. You know, I know we like to victimize everyone in this country, particularly when it comes to the for-profit motivation, which is being assaulted. But, you know, it's a tragedy, but I think it's a stretch, an amazing stretch, to sort of try to pin this on Walmart. And listen, Walmart had its problems, and they have come a long way, and I think they will continue to do well, you know, and improve in any area they can. I'm not here as an apologist for Walmart.
Except for the fact that you are.
But I am here as something as a spokesperson for capitalism and the American dream, and I think for a lot of people this is a step in the right direction.
So let's get that squared up. Charles Payne, commenter at Radio Rwanda, says that, well, as a spokesman, as an apologist for capitalism, you know, sometimes 129 Bangladeshis just die in a fire because there's an assault on the for-profit motive. Huh? I don't think something like this will happen again. Bull. It'll happen again and again and again. I mean, consider. These were the circumstances at the Tazreen Factories plant sweatshop where these 129 human beings burned alive so that Walmart could claim low prices, always. You know, the prices aren't so low when you think about them, including the cost of a little Bangladeshi child who no longer has a mother, for those low prices. Those prices aren't so low when they include the cost of the life of a little Bangladeshi who might start work when she was 12 or something. No, Tarzine factories had sewing machines, and they had lots of other stuff there for making the gymcrack clothing. I mean, that they sell in Walmart and God knows how many other stores in this country. But they didn't have any fire extinguishers. And, you know, because those workers are so prone to, you know, when they take unauthorized breaks, that's just like stealing from the company. So naturally, when you get them into work, what do? Well, you lock the doors. Keep the lazy sods in there sewing away and working and packaging and folding and boxing. Or they'll try to get out 5 minutes early. Yeah, the exits were locked. And then when the fire extinguisher, no fire extinguishers, and then when the fire alarm, they did have one. Yay. When the fire alarms went off, the managers told the workers on the lines to go back to work. And yes, what did Charles Payne say? I want to make sure.
You know, listen, it's one of the things I don't think something like this will happen again. Don't think that the people in Bangladesh who perished didn't want or need those jobs as well. You know, I know we like to victimize everyone in this country, particularly when it comes to the for-profit motivation, which is being assaulted. But,
Really. You've got the nerve to sit in front of a camera and say for-profit motivation is being assaulted when 129 people just got roasted alive. Wow. That's some chutzpah.
Tragedy, but I think it's a stretch, an amazing stretch, to sort of try to pin this on Walmart.
It's a stretch. It's an amazing sort of stretch to try to pin this on Walmart. Let's see, how much of a stretch is it? Brands sold by Walmart were found in the ruin, in the ashes, in the rubble of the factory. Because, see, Walmart manages every penny. And if that factory had been a humane place for human beings to work, Walmart would have said their product was too costly and gone to another country with lower standards. The cost of some shitty little t-shirt at Walmart includes a calculation by someone working in Bentonville, Arkansas, that having fire extinguishers would keep the Walmart heirs, the Walton heirs, from getting rich enough. Just let that sink all the way in. 129 people dead because somebody, some executive vice president in Bentonville, Arkansas, made the determination that adding fire extinguishers kept them from being able to offer low prices always. How could you even walk into one of these places knowing what you know? How could I? How could any one of us? What's the latest kiddie star that they're selling hand over fist t-shirts with the kids' image? Maybe a Justin Bieber t-shirt. I don't know. But it is good at this time of year that we take just long enough to remember that consumer choices have ethical and real-world physical consequences. Yeah, the circumstances are indeed reminiscent, Jim. Jim writes, are you surprised? Remember the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York City? Same thing. Exits blocked and the workers told to go back to work. But it's capitalism that's being assaulted. Things like this make you really wonder how much of a mess, an ethical mess, a spiritual mess, a philosophical mess, an existential mess, how much of a mess this country is in. You know, the right wing and the fetus people like to put up billboards of little aborted fetuses. Maybe it's about time we took a page out of their playbook. Maybe at least we would learn a little bit about this sick, psychotic consumer culture. If we took some posters with pictures of flash-fried Bangladeshis and stood at the parking lot entrance out on the public right-of-way for Walmart. I go back to that quote from Vonnegut that sits at the bottom of all of my emails outbound. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. And if we were to do things like what I just suggested, that might would that maybe be a little scream at the otherwise numbed and deafened conscience of this country? You see, the math has been done. There is not that much of a savings in making this cheap crap in Bangladesh. The savings mainly come in the fact that a government like Bangladesh cannot enforce any kind of workplace safety rules. And that is the kind of out to the 9th and 10th and 15th decimal point calculations that they specialize in Bentonville, Arkansas. When they say they can't afford to make Justin Bieber t-shirts in America, what they mean is they can't afford to make Justin Bieber t-shirts in America without occasionally roasting 129 people alive. See, that's the way globalism works. One of these days, in this century, when America's star has faded, because, rest assured, the consumptive capitalists, the cancer capitalists, the metastasized capitalists will cause that star to fade, we will be making Justin Bieber t-shirts or whomever the current pop star is. We'll be making them back here in America. And we will be making them in sewing shops that are almost a dead, and I do mean dead, ringer for the one that went up like flash paper in Bangladesh. Mr. Charles Powell should probably not go out, I'm sorry, Charles Payne, should probably not go out and tell the world that he's a spokesman for capitalism and the American dream, and then say, for a lot of people, this is a step in the right direction. You know, 129 people roasting alive in a sweatshop. By all means, don't blame the penny pinchers. Why couldn't those people get out of their building? Why didn't they have a crowbar? Couldn't they get the key? I'm sure that some member of management would have gladly given them the... No, the doors were locked and they were told to go back to work. And again, the eternal question that I come back to time and time and time again. How many millions of Americans sat there watching Charles Payne, listening to his words, hearing him say,
and Walmart had its problems, and they have come a long way, and I think they will continue to do well, you know, and improve in any area they can. I'm not here as an apologist for Walmart, but I am here as something as a spokesperson for capitalism and the American dream, and I think for a lot of people this is a step in the right direction.
How many Emerys and Eileens? How many Homer and Marvelines heard that? And all they heard were the dog whistle words like American dream. And said, well, yeah, sure thing. Everybody, American dream. Yeah, honey, we still got that Lee Greenwood record. I'm feeling like listening to I'm proud to be an American. God almighty. How many Americans? Marveline, let's make sure we, next time we're over to the Wally World, let's make sure we pick up some shirts that was made in Bangladesh. That'd help them probably get back on their feet after they's all burnt alive and everything. God almighty. It's unbearable. But then again, it's also just another day in capitalism. Because if you're going to have an omelet, you got to roast a few Bangladeshis. Is that how that works? Damn. Yeah, Waggy in the chat room. Yep, that's what I dream of every night, burning brown people alive for my own profit. Hey, it worked for the British, the Raj in Britain. Okay, I have no idea what's going on with Skype here. Bob, do you have me blocked on Skype on your end? My end seems to keep telling me I can't call blocked contacts, but you're not blocked here. No, this is, I don't know, does it make a difference that I'm on a different computer? Makes no sense. Nobody's blocked. No, oh, well, who knows? Sorry, Jeremy. Jim pointing out Grover Norquist, an oath, No, it's not an oath, Jim. It's a pledge. Who elected him? Never saw or heard of his name on a ballot. You? No, not on a ballot, but on plenty of letters from Americans for tax hoodly-doo. He made the better part of the entire Congress sign that pledge. Yeah. Just like they used to sign pledges to bring about prohibition. Saw how that worked out, didn't we? Going back to the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that Jim mentioned, our buddy Harry, sorry, our buddy Harry wrote in with an excerpt from Wikipedia. A bookkeeper on the 8th floor was able to warn employees on the 10th floor via telephone. But there was no audible alarm and no way to contact staff on the 9th floor. According to survivor Yetta Lubitz, the first warning of the fire on the 9th floor arrived at the same time as the fire itself. Although the floor had a number of exits, including two freight elevators, a fire escape, and stairways down to Green Street and Washington Place, flames prevented workers from descending the Green Street stairway, and the door to the Washington Place stairway was locked to prevent theft by the workers. The locked doors allowed managers to check the women's purses. The foreman who held the stairway door key had already escaped by another route. You see, these miserable profiteers, these conscienceless capitalists, will kill you for a scrap of cloth. They really will. They will kill you for a nickel of profit. Because human beings are only the people they decide are human beings. What a world. And that was 100 years ago. The 100th anniversary was just last year. And yet it's happening over and over again. If the building doesn't burn down, it collapses. I remember when, probably 2004, the collapse of a knitting factory that made sweaters to keep Americans toasty and warm collapsed in Bangladesh. What does the company worry about then? How will we ever get our investment in that factory back? Since 2006, over 200 people have died in Bangladeshi garment factories. Low prices. Always. Always. By the way, speaking of morons, we've got it's past Thanksgiving, but we've got a Thanksgiving message here from the National Organization for Marriage. And Jennifer Roback Morse of that organization's Ruth Institute. This is now the National Organization for Marriage. They're super right wing, fundamentalist, evangelical. Marriage is one man and one woman. It says so in the Bible, even though the Bible doesn't say it. Here's the Thanksgiving. Yeah, Thanksgiving. We gather together to eat the dry turkey. Yeah, right. This is the Thanksgiving message from the National Organization for Marriage.
Hello. Hello, friends of Ruth. I'm Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, and I'm talking to you from our studios here in Southern California.
Doctor, yeah, she couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody.
Today is November 20th, 2012. I want to share with you an experience that I had last week. I was visiting with a large state university, and I had a speaking engagement with a Catholic student group there. One of the young ladies in the group told me that she's a resident advisor in her dorm, and the chief resident advisor in her particular dorm happened to be a homosexual man. Last year, he decided that it was a good idea to have, as a social event in their dorm, a drag party. A drag party presumably would be where everybody dresses up in clothing of the opposite sex. Well, this young lady that I met...
Wait. Doctor... I'd love to see the diploma from the Draw Spunky Institute that gave her a doctorate. Dr. Roback Morse says that a drag party is where everybody wears the clothing of the opposite sex. Let's get one thing clear real quick, like. Only one half of the human species is not allowed to wear the clothing of the opposite gender. That's the male half. Part of the empowerment of women over the last 100 years or so has been that they get to choose their clothing now. Women can let their ankles be seen and any other part of them that they wish to, because, you know, freedom. My grandmother never wore and never would wear and probably would have been convinced that she was headed right on greased barrel staves for hell if she had ever put on a pair of pants. But I would guess in terms of the statistics of clothing manufacture, since we were talking about the garment factory fire in Bangladesh a minute ago, I thought this would go well that way. That in women's wear, there are as many pairs of pants sold as dresses? Fair, Agnes? Okay. And, I mean, I've seen you wear pants. I'm not going to say it. I'm awful. I'm going to hell just for what I'm thinking. I've never seen anybody, when we were out in public, say, there goes that cross-dresser Agnes Kincaid, when you were wearing pants. Well, I'm not going to talk about your balls. She said, they do say I've got balls, though. I'm trying to keep this on an even keel here. But when women wear pants, no one hollers cross-dresser at them. But even Scotsmen get a little kind of a looky look when they show up in the kilt at the wedding. So each gender dressing as the opposite sex wouldn't be a drag party. Only the guys dressing as females would be in drag. Maybe I'm putting too fine a point on this, but if, what's her name, Robitussin Morse, thinks that, I mean, I bet she's wearing pants. I don't want to see, I bet she's wearing pants in this video. There's at least a 50-50 chance. But if she thinks women are cross-dressing when they put on a pair of pants, and, well, she is antediluvian. But let's back up.
Advisor in her particular dorm happened to be a homosexual man. Last year, he decided that it was a good idea to have, as a social event in their dorm, a drag party.
You know, because that's all gay men think about is having drag parties. I
and we'll bring our Barbra Streisand albums.
A drag party presumably would be where everybody dresses up in clothing of the opposite sex.
Well, no, presumably it wouldn't be, but we've been over that, Dr. Robitussin.
Well, this young lady that I met, good Catholic girl, was not eager to participate, and she said, you know, I really don't think I can be part of this. This is just not something I want to contribute to.
Yeah, because, you know, the good Catholic girl you were talking to there, Dr. Robitussin, she's never wore no pants. How miserably screwed up are we in the head over gender in this country? And so consequently, you got Dr. Robitussin here trying to screw people up a little bit more. I don't know what kind of a following the Ruth Institute has. I didn't know that there was a right-wing fundamentalist evangelical institute dedicated to the famous early 20th century baseball star. Oh, wait, it's probably Book of Ruth from the Old Testament. All right, never mind.
And he pressed her pretty hard about why and tried to, you know, he was really leaning on her, trying to make her uncomfortable. She felt very strongly that he was trying to get her to either go along with the program or make her feel bad, make her look bad. Finally,
yeah, she felt that because it's all about our feelings. We don't have to prove anything because she just believes things Dr. Ruth Robitussin does. There's no proof there. You're going to have it. What? You're going to have one of them drag parties with men in dresses and a wearing makeup and women are wearing pants? I don't think I'm comfortable with that because, you know, it says there in Deuteronomy that we're all supposed to walk around in clothing made of one fiber, and that fiber is the hair of the mountain goat. I ain't going to hell for your drag party. Yeah, because he pressed her. You know, that's how it is with those homosexual men. They're always running around pressing people. Our resident expert one of our resident religion experts, Texas Betsy, the Horns Jewish mom, says, as someone who wears skirts, dresses, or slacks designed for women for religious reasons, I must say that it would never occur to me to be offended by this. Well, Betsy, that's because you're not, what's the word I'm looking for, insane. That's because you do not define your faith by how many people you can force to conform to your religious bigotries. And I'm not saying you have religious bigotries. I'm saying but the fundies do. Well, see, there you go. That unisex stuff. She says, I wear T-shirts designed for anyone. But, you know, that unisexism, that's just one of those gateway garments. It's a gateway garment. Little boy puts on a T-shirt that can be worn by a male or a female. The next thing you know, he's wearing a stunning taffeta cocktail frock. Taffeta, darling. Say it. Taffeta, darling.
Taffeta, darling.
Taffeta, darling. Taffeta. No, the dress is made of taffeta. I'm sorry, young Frankenstein reference, but anyway.
Wait a minute. You made a comment that she was speaking to a Catholic.
Talk into the microphone, dear. Into the microphone.
If you'd move that big old alien head, I would.
I'd be happy to.
Okay, so you made a comment that Dr. Robitussin there was speaking to a Catholic girl.
Yes.
Well,
a good Catholic girl, not just any Catholic. Well, she wasn't one of them trashy Catholic girls.
Well, when I was very young, I was a good Catholic girl, but our priests wear...
Well, their priests do wear dresses, don't they?
Yeah, well, I was just going to bring that into play.
Stunning Italian shoes.
And they wear pants also.
Yeah, and the House of Whoville hat.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore.
No,
but
you got it all right. You don't practice anymore.
Yeah, I don't practice. But I kind of look at it that it doesn't matter what you dress like, or because I do like a nice, well-turned leg. Why?
That I hate
just
it when I turn my ankle. Never mind.
Yeah, I know. But why? A drag party? Why shouldn't you just
well,
be able
to... Well, I don't know.
To...
We're going to... Here, I'll share half of the headphones with you.
You're going to make me listen to this,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, let's listen to Dr. Robitussin explain to us what was going on. We'll back up a little bit for context here. Wouldn't want to take her out of context. You know, every time you criticize a right-winger, they holler that they're being taken out of context.
Is that the woman there?
Yeah, oh, that's her.
Oh, then I know what's wrong.
I think she's in drag. That's a man, baby.
That. She can't help it if she's
just not something I want to contribute to. And he pressed her pretty hard about why and tried to, you know, he was really leaning on her and trying to make her uncomfortable. She felt very strongly that he was trying to get her to either go along with the program or make her feel bad, make her look bad.
Finally, now, let's remember, this is the Thanksgiving message of the Ruth Institute.
Jesus. Let it play. Come on.
What they came up with is that she would need to do her own program, provide her own event, a counter event, not a counter event necessarily, but some additional event that she would have sole responsibility for putting on for a dormitory of 800 students. So he was pressuring her to participate, and he was being punitive with her. Now the reason.
Wait. How is that punitive? Okay, honey, you don't want to come to the drag party, don't come to the drag party. You want a different kind of party, you organize your own party. Manage your own party. I'm not going to try to tell you how to have a party. Have your own party. But that's the oppression part? Excuse me? Do you see how these weirdos in the right-wing religion industry are? Do you see how they manifest this idea of their persecution all the time? I mean, remember, she's a good Catholic girl. She is a member of a religion whose membership counts in the billions. But she is an oppressed minority because she objects to a little bit of lighthearted fun. Oh, for God's sakes. Well, tell us more, Dr. Robitussin.
I tell you this story is that I think a lot of our students are encountering this type of situation in their dorms and on their college campuses. In the aftermath of the election, a lot of social conservatives are really concerned about what's going on in the culture, and we're saying to ourselves, gosh, we need to do something about the media. Gosh, we needed more TV ads for our program, for our political campaign. Gosh, we needed more TV ads in order to get our political message out. What I want to say to you is that the other side has RAs in the dorm where your young people are.
The other side has RAs in the dorm where your young people. The other side. Like this is a war.
Wait, what's the other side?
The homos.
Quit that.
You know.
The other side?
The other side.
You realize that all Catholics aren't like this, right?
This isn't about Catholicism, honey.
I'm not sure what it is.
She is a homophobic bigot. And from the looks of things, probably has her own issues.
Well, I'm thinking. She's got lots of issues.
No, you know when Terry Jones would play a female character in Monty Python?
Yes.
She looks like Terry Jones.
No, she just looks really sad.
So, let's back up.
You're going to make me listen to it again?
That I think a lot of our students are encountering this type of situation in their dorms and on their college campuses.
See how she says, I think, when she means I believe? In other words, she gets one story told to her by a bigoted, hardcore young Catholic girl, and she extrapolates that into, there are lots of students who are being pressured into going to drag parties in our colleges and universities, and there are gay RAs who are encouraging people to hang disco balls, and dear God, where are we going?
In the aftermath of the election, a lot of social conservatives are really concerned about what's going on in the culture, and we're saying to ourselves, gosh, we need to do something about the media. Gosh, we needed more TV ads for our program, for our political campaign. Gosh, we needed more TV ads in order to get our political message out. What I want to say to you is that the other side has RAs in the dorm where your young people are going to school. There's no TV message that is going to do the job of countering that type of influence. Somebody's got to be there talking to young people one at a time in the places where they're hanging out and doing the things that they're doing. There is no mass media strategy by itself that will solve this problem. And so we feel here at the Ruth Institute that our mission is more important than ever, because we're the ones who are out there talking to the young people. We're going to their classes. We're providing them with educational content. We're spending time with them. We're hanging out with them. We're listening to what they have to say. So I would really, really encourage you to support the Ruth Institute to the best of your ability. We're doing something that nobody else is doing, and I think you'll agree, something that really needs to get done. And this holiday season, when your young people come home from college, ask them about this. Ask them if they have a gay RA in their dorms. Because as I've talked to other people about this, a lot of them have said, gosh, now that you mention it, my daughter was in a dorm, even at a Christian college, where she had a gay RA.
So to review, this turns into nothing but a sleazy money hustle on the part of the Ruth Institute to get them extra money to go and hang out with people and ask them if they have gay RAs. You know, resident advisors. What a sick lot. If you're listening to this program from some civilized country, is this shocking to you? Because this is perfectly acceptable to millions upon millions of Americans. Rat out your gay RA. What is the Ruth Institute? Some sort of sexual Stasi? Oh, come to think of it, I think I had a gay RA. Jim writing, drag, another hag, or Hagee? Who the F cares? Remember the man drag so well done by Marlena Dietrich. Oh, good call, Jim. Falling in love again. Right? Yeah. The man drag done so well by Marlena Dietrich and fondly executed. Milton Berle used the same as his trademark. Jim says, my drag name used to be Head of Lettuce. He does that. Jim does that on purpose. Just to hear me fall apart. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Agnes just reminded me. Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny's in drag every other cartoon. Oh, what an interesting monster. You know, it's a shame when an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo. Bobby Pence, please. No, this is never going to hold. You're going to need a payment. And, you know, I was just talking to my girlfriend the other day down at the shop. Hit all this. Jim closes saying, please, please. Jeremy in Vermont noting, it would be nice if this Bible-thumping bitch would mention that 90% of all cross-dressers of the male gender are not gay and, in fact, quite straight. Lost on her. But the larger issue is, what kind of really low-rent, undeveloped brain sort of marginal primate defines human beings by their clothing unless, you know, I mean, okay, there's some defining by clothing that is done out there. For instance, if a guy's got a uniform, if a guy's got a particular set of clothing on and a gun, he's a cop. If he's got different clothing on and a gun, he's a bank robber. But really? This from our buddy Philip in regard to his subject line is Walmart, Capitalism, and America. I wasn't planning on writing, but my youngest daughter is planning on majoring in economics, and she and I have been discussing the current doctrine of allegedly free market capitalism, Milton Friedman, such like. Now, it would be far too obvious to nominate Charles Payne or anyone else on Fox for More and Monday. Hell, it would be redundant. But where in the frickin' Constitution does it wed free market raw capitalism with the concept of a representative republic? Good question, Philip. Hint, it don't. I regurgitate nightly, Philip says, from the mindless worship of the affluent white men with property who founded this country, and the blatant distortion rather than the emulation of their ideas. And for their time, their progressivism. But just when I recover from tonight's symbolic non-Irish hurling event, along comes Charles Payne. My thoughts were the same as Jim's, and of course I thought of Bhopal. Oh, yeah. Those ungrateful third worlders who expect to both earn and enjoy a living. Capitalism demands they make their choice for the well-being of corporations and the perennial gamblers known as shareholders, and it better not diminish our corporation's profits. No, better those Bangladeshis die grateful for having had the opportunity to eke out a living for the corporations in the greatest country in the world. Philip closes saying, Mr. Payne, have you no decency, sir? Also noting, I attended a Catholic high school and college. My dorm RA from 1972 through 1975 was gay, but the only thing that was a drag was my early morning classes. He was well respected by everyone. Then again, at the time, we were more worried about pederast priests and brothers than we were gays engaging in consensual relationships. The press hadn't yet caught on, and our parents wouldn't have believed that we were exaggerating, but we knew who they were. Ironic that a Catholic girl who has seen men wear cassocks and weird headdresses if they were cardinals or higher would be so shocked by men wearing women's clothes. Ironic indeed. Thank you, Philip. No, just a couple more, since we're on the topic. Gay and drag are not synonyms. There are a growing number of committed, loving gay couples in this country who have had long-term relationships, but are finally being allowed the full participation in the constitutional guarantees that frame this nation. That's happening in states where marriage equity is declared at law. One of those states that has recognized marriage equity, and recently, is the state of Washington. And every progressive and every liberal in that state can be proud, because the expansion of rights is always a better barometer of how the republic is doing than any contracting of them. One of the huge corporations headquartered in Washington State is, of course, Boeing. And on the heels of Washington State passing marriage equity, the Boeing Corporation has made an important announcement. The Boeing Corporation has determined that even though marriage equity is a matter of law in the state of Washington now, that Boeing will more than likely deny pension survivor benefits to same-sex legally married couples. That was the message that was sent to the union from Boeing management. Ray Goforth is the union rep, and he told a publication called The Stranger that Boeing claims pension benefits are governed by the Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act, which is called ERISA, and that it will not, since it's a federal act, that it doesn't have to extend survivor pension benefits to same-sex married couples.
because it would be voluntary for them to do so. The article from The Stranger says, Goforth explains that his union has long sought equal pension benefits for same-sex domestic partners to no avail. But since voters approved same-sex marriage, establishing parity with married straight couples, Goforth reframed the proposal to apply to his union's gay Boeing employees who wed. Their answer, he said, was that they had no intention of granting pension survivor benefits to legally married same-sex couples because they didn't have to. Goforth added, we were profoundly disappointed to see that they would use a loophole to engage in institutionalized discrimination. It has at least, since the story came out, it has at least brought some heat to Boeing. They now say that they're going to reassess the impact of Washington State's marriage equality referendum. So we got a little bit of a late start, but we got a show in. I anticipate there will be another show tomorrow night. Hopefully we'll sort out some of these Skype issues. Thank you, everyone, who tuned in for tuning in. And we'll work on getting the conversation a little more conversant, a little less one-sided, as it were. But thank you for the emails. That makes things fun, too. Thank you to all of you who keep this program going whenever you've done it and however you do it, by mail or by PayPal. Thank you very much for your contributions of your ideas and your time and your thoughts and your humor. It is what makes this program and the horn so absolutely unique. We did not bring in any contributions this evening, which means that the likelihood of us reaching our monthly fundraising goal has just diminished by a day. Maybe it'll be better tomorrow. PayPal button for those of you who might want to later is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address under the tab Contribute. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky, our chat room moderators. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Agnes. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. It is because of the AIC Act that we are here in Washington, D.C. Go to acact.org and learn how you can help bring about an end to Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.